Premier Christian Newscast.
It's not just a toddler group. Emphasis on the just. That's the title and message of a new report which urges churches to take their midweek parents and toddler groups much more seriously. These groups are not just about toys on mats, beakers of juice and some respite for tired mums, but are vital for children's flourishing and also for drawing families into the wider church community. The report is one of a number of recent initiatives trying to reignite ministry with children, which has been hammered by the pandemic, where lots of young people lost touch with the church during lockdown and never came back. But how are we doing at relaunching children's ministry since then? Is it properly integrated with the rest of our church lives? And what about those thousands of churches that don't really have any young people anymore? Is Christianity becoming a religion for grown-ups only? I'm Tim Wyatt, and you're listening to the Premier Christian Newscast. This week, I'm joined by Emma Fowle and Sam Hales from Premier Christianity magazine to explore ministry with young people and children and ask what the future holds for this vital part of the church's outreach. Well, thanks, Sam and Emma, for joining us, as always, from Premier Christianity magazine. Our topic for today is children's ministry, or more specifically, work with young people, toddler groups, those kind of things, which is obviously a kind of stalwart of what almost all churches do, I think, probably, is have some kind of group in the middle of the week for toddlers or children, as well as, obviously, hopefully, if you have children in the congregation, something on Sundays. There was a really interesting report that came out last month that I don't know if you guys spotted from the Gather movement, which is a kind of a coalition of different charities and movements kind of working with children, which is kind of big picture calling for churches to kind of re-recognize the significance of these midweek toddler groups and kind of attempt to and reject people who are trying to undermine their value. And so the title is, it's not just a parent and toddler group, you know, but in along the lines that people often describe them as, oh, it's just a parent and toddler group. And they're saying, actually, we can often underrate and downplay the value of what we do. Beneath the surface of our noisy, messy, and chaotic sessions, there are all sorts of hidden treasure. Children are learning how to interact with others, developing communication skills, gaining resilience, growing in curiosity. And we've helped them prepare for leaving us and starting to put on a school uniform 5 mornings a week. Do you guys feel like toddler ministry is undervalued in the church? To start with that question, is it something that we just kind of do because we do, or do you think it's, yeah, is it seen as important?
I think it like massively varies, like anything. There'll be some churches that do this excellently and that really, really invest in it and that really see its value. I think the vast swathes probably either don't do anything at all or take it for granted. I've got 2 older teens now, they're 16 and 18, but obviously, like a lot of parents, as you have kids, as they go through those various stages, you get involved in all those little groups in your own church and start to see it from a new perspective, and one that probably I didn't really appreciate before I had children of my own. I ran the toddler group at church, I helped in the creche, I helped in the Sunday school, I helped with the youth group. We've come like right out the other side of that now. And I would say, as a broad sweep, if you had to pin me on it and not sit on the fence, yes, probably as church we do undervalue toddler groups and all kids ministry, really, despite the fact that Jesus very clearly talks about how much he values little children a lot in the Gospels.
Same question to you, Sam. Do you think, as someone, I believe, more recently involved, if not currently, with toddlers in your life, do you think ministry to that kind of age is kind of ignored or sidelined?
Well, I would say an awful lot of churches I'm aware of, probably most, have some form of toddler group running, which I think is amazing. And as this booklet points out, a lot of toddler groups charge a small amount, but pretty much every church will run a toddler group for free or for certainly less than what other people are charging. So I think in that sense, it's an area the church is very involved in. So in that sense, we value it. But I agree with what Emma says, that I think it's very easy within churches to not give it as much priority as we should. the thing I've noticed is just how difficult it can be to find the volunteers. I mean, these groups tend to run midweek in the day when, I don't know, maybe 80 or 90% of your church congregation is in some kind of employment. So that immediately means, you know, volunteers are fewer. The kind of obvious person to then ask is a young mum who is a stay-at-home mum who has kids of their own. But of course, that mum may not feel able to both parent their little ones and be involved as a leader. And so again, in my experience, I think the church, as in many areas, is often relying on people who are older, perhaps retired, who have the time to do that. And then you look at that, you think there's an entire army of often older women, tends to be, running things like this in churches, who are really keeping these ministries going and doing an amazing job. When I think of people like that, if I were to ask them, do you feel valued by your church community for all these hours you put into running the toddler group? I don't like to think what the answer may be. So I think the challenge is yes, we probably all of us could do a bit of a better job at showing how much we do value this incredible work that goes on often for free, often vulnerable people in our local communities, week in, week out, doing the hard work and often not getting the recognition for it.
It strikes me that, as you say, Sam, it's really common. You know, I can't really remember the last time I was involved in a church or came aware of a church that didn't have some kind of midweek offering for young kind of preschool age children. But is it? I often wonder if we kind of do it because we've done it for 30 years and it's been kind of passed down, and often some of the volunteers are super long term and doesn't make it invaluable. But is it connected into the rest of what a church is up to? You know, I go to one most Tuesdays and Wednesdays, sometimes depending on childcare stuff with our daughter. And I think it's great, you know, and it's got these lovely twinkly old ladies who buzz around making cups of tea and, you know, chatting to us. And they always seem particularly fascinated that I'm a father rather than a mother there with a child. What a radical idea. And I think it's great, but it does feel slightly disconnected from what the rest of that church is doing, the rest of, on Sundays or in the rest of midweek. And I don't know to what extent, I'm like, is this a missional initiative or is this purely a kind of social provision because the church cares about young people? Do you think people are clear about what the point of these groups are?
I'm not sure they always are. But you know, before we get to that, I'd like to really pull us up on the kind of assumption that all churches do this. We are three people who have kids who have probably picked churches that are fairly family orientated. But like, I wrote a long form piece for the Mag about this 3 years ago, and that was stating Church of England statistics that over a third of C of E churches do not have any under 16s whatsoever. So I think it would be remiss of us to assume that all churches do this, because clearly they don't. And on top of that, three quarters of Anglican churches have less than five under 16s in their congregations. So, you know, I'm not sure the statistics would support all churches mainly do this, because I don't think they do. But where they are, I think they do it well, and it's because they've made a decision to provide for families, and a lot of churches, let's be fair, do that really well. But I think especially with the toddler group thing, yes, from my experience, having got ours back up and running when my kids were little, after it had been closed for a few years, it did feel very detached from the main body of work of the church. And I think like a lot of like midweek youth groups, you often get that question from leaders after a little while that everyone's very excited when it first gets up and running. And then people start saying, oh, but what's the fruit? Like, how many people have actually come into the Sunday morning service because of what you're doing on a Tuesday? And then you start to get into this numbers game. And I don't know what the answer is to that, honestly, because there is a part of me that's like, well, of course we want to see people coming to our, you know, social outreach stuff and then eventually becoming Christians and coming to church. But at the same time, is that a fair measure? I don't know. I don't believe that it is. I believe the work that it does is important as a standalone piece. And it's important that leadership don't sort of too quickly get into that numbers game and start putting that pressure on people, because it's not productive, I don't think.
Yeah, and I can think of actually quite a lot of amazing stories of people who have come to faith kind of through a toddler group. I can think of, there's a lot of stories out there often, and again, tends to be kind of youngish, young mums form an amazing kind of community in the experiences I can think of and the stories I can think of, form a kind of amazing community at a toddler group. And it's a mixture of people who go to the church who are Christians and those who aren't. And out of that friendship comes a very natural invitation to church, comes a very natural invitation to other things the church is doing for kids. And I can think of stories of like, quite significant numbers of people coming to faith partly as a result through a toddler group. But Emma's absolutely right. There are more stories where that's probably not happening, and you want to still value the importance of that toddler group, regardless of how many people became Christians last week or last month or last year. And I wonder sometimes if for every great positive story we tell amongst ourselves as Christians of the evangelistic impact a toddler group has, which is great, if we're in danger then of forgetting it, even if people aren't coming to faith, it's actually still really good that you're providing a safe, free space for people who really need it, and that the church is known in your local community for showing real kindness to people. And I think as well, there's something in this idea of who society values and how much. We've mentioned older people already who are often key volunteers, but also younger people who can be looked down upon. And actually, you think there's something really wonderfully countercultural about the church providing a space for people of all ages and providing a place for people who sometimes feel at the edges of society to find a real welcome. And there's something really powerful in that.
Yeah, I guess that pushes back against the idea that like everything we do as churches needs to be ruthlessly efficient in terms of channeling people towards the Alpha course and then into becoming church members and then into joining a home group and then into leadership and then onto the rota. And it's like the idea that Christian discipleship is simply a ratcheting process. And actually, there'll be lots of people who will never call themselves Christians with a big C and maybe regularly attend, but that doesn't mean there's nothing of value to be done in giving ourselves away. I guess the counter argument would be it is, you know, there's an opportunity cost, and using the church hall for two mornings a week, you know, aside from the financial cost, it is also that's volunteer time and space that could be done doing something else, soup kitchen, you know, English classes of refugees, you know, whatever it is, some other form of ministry. And do we do these toddler groups out of kind of habit rather than out of like strategic missional imperative is sometimes my question. When I've been to some that are excellent and seem really plugged in, and they're always advertising other kids' activities. You can come along and come to our light party on Halloween and come to our Easter party. And these are all like to try and draw people into faith. But I've been to some other where I'm like, this might as well, if it wasn't in a Christian building, it might as well be run by the council. It's completely secularized, which is maybe fine, but it's like, is there value in just doing this because we've always done this? Sometimes it feels a bit kind of robotic almost.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, there's no silver bullet, as there were, it comes to sort of how a church should engage in either social action or evangelism. And I get quite antsy when people sort of talk about these things as if it's some kind of, like you say, some strategy or, you know, conveyor belt that if we just do X, Y, and Z, then we will be being effective ministers of gospel. Like, no, these things have to be prayed into and considered, and you know, you have to ask the Holy Spirit what he's asking your church to do at any one point in time. And I would certainly take issue with, if you're running a toddler group, and you've chosen not to make it very outwardly Christian. That has to be done in a very considered manner, because you've prayed about it and you've considered that to be the appropriate. And that is the appropriate approach for some people in some locations at some points in time. But not just because you can't be bothered to work in a creative way of sharing the fact that the reason you're running a toddler group is because you're all Christians and you love your local community and that's, you know, part of your faith. So I like, you know, it doesn't always have to be really, really in your face, but it does have to have some prayer and some Holy Spirit consideration behind it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think I'd be happy to be pretty radical on this one and say, look, if you're a Christian in a church building running a toddler group and there isn't even a quick like Bible story, something as like simple as that, that shows it's a distinctively Christian run thing, I would say, what are you doing? Like, you're in a church building. It's a Christian run thing. Why are you hiding your faith? There's no need. And, you know, am I being unfair, Tim? I just think if it's a Christian run in a church building, surely there should be a Christian distinctiveness about that toddler group. Even something as subtle as in the middle, halfway through, there's a 2-minute story about Noah's Ark. It's not going to offend anyone, is it?
I agree that it's not going to offend anyone, and you know, or you could say like in the songed circle, as well as doing head, shoulders, knees and toes, let's also do Our God is a Great Big God or something like that, you know, pretty inoffensive. I can't see what the kind of downside to that would be. I guess, again, for me, it all comes down to this kind of like ambiguity about the intention. And I think maybe some churches do need to think about, like, what are we doing this for? Is it like a soup kitchen, which is like, we saw a need in our community, people were struggling, and we wanted to like reach them with the love and bless them with the love of Jesus. And if they want to ask questions about faith, we're not going to pretend we're not Christians, but like, we're not going to institutionalize it, structure it as evangelistic. Or is it, you know, something that is intended to be a kind of, you know, precursor to baby alpha or whatever? So I think it all comes down to definition and a clarity about what you're doing and what you are gathering all those resources to deploy.
Premier Christian Newscast. Premier Christian Newscast.
I guess the other thing I would say is, you know, this is all happening in a context, as Emma has given us the stats, where children's ministry is kind of withering away, if we're brutally honest, you know, dying on the vine, particularly accelerated massively by the COVID pandemic, you know, where the stats were already, you know, there were fewer and fewer churches with children in their congregations. But if you guys see the stats, it massively accelerated after COVID, or basically a whole bunch of families lost the habit of going to church and haven't come back. You know, so the C of E, as always, has the best stats on this, but child attendance is down 28% since 2019. It's down almost 30% in just 4 years since these stats were taken, in children's attendance. And there are 68% of children, 68% of C of E churches have fewer than five young people in them. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to like a kids group where there's only five or fewer people. Like, it's hard work, you know. Our church has often got that or fewer number of young people in it, and like, to get any kind of momentum, to get any kind of initiative going is really hard work. So I think you could argue actually there's a greater urgency for these kind of toddler groups and kind of pre-evangelist children's ministry, because there's such a crisis about young people in congregations more generally.
Yeah.
And that, therefore, we should be throwing resources into this more.
Yeah. I mean, just, you're right, the numbers are pretty depressing. Our local church, though, runs Messy Church. Only does it, I think, once a quarter. But when we do, maybe 150, 200 people pack the place out. And it's, and you know, from speaking to people who organise it, their theory is, well, it's because it's for families and for kids, and it's completely free. So if you could run something completely free from your church for the local community, and if they have crafts and songs and even free food at the end, like a little tea for the kids with sandwiches and cakes and stuff, hugely popular. I said, how are you getting so many people? You know, I said, well, we just create a free Facebook event and just and so you do hear those stories. I'm like, wow, it is possible, you know, before we kind of get too down in the doldrums about the statistics. Maybe I'm making it sound too simple, because I appreciate this is huge volunteer hours that go into something doing this, because it is large scale. But, you know, a fairly, if I dare say the word, fairly average sort of Church of England church in a smallish town, getting 150 to a messy church, it is possible. And there is appetite out there. And I think sometimes there is more willingness to engage with the church, especially when it's putting on great activities for free, than sometimes we think there is. I sometimes wonder if we're in danger of talking too much about our secular society and atheists and everything else. You forget, actually, the average person, if you're putting on free food and activities for their toddler or their young person, they're going to be there. They don't care what the Archbishop of Canterbury said or didn't say last week. You're looking after their kids. You're providing a good welcome. Sign me up. So, you know, I want to say it is possible. And something like Messy Church is, I think, an incredible success story, because it's run across denominations. And, you know, and again, I think it speaks, it gives families real meaningful spiritual content without bashing people over the head with the Bible. I just feel like there's so much that something like Messy Church does that's right and is culturally on point and is easy for churches to access. And in my experience, there is still huge appetite out there for when churches are able to put stuff like that on.
Absolutely. I'd 100% agree. Like, we had a piece on premierchristianity.com last week from the Diocese of Blackburn. They've put a huge amount of money and strategy into working with young people in their diocese over the last 8 years. They produced a strategy document in 2016. In this lovely piece that they wrote for us, detailing all of the great things that are going on, they said that they've launched over 100 new congregations in the last 5 years in the Diocese of Blackburn. And those sort of groups and congregations and gatherings of Christians are taking all sorts of creative forms, like from messy churches to muddy churches to cafe churches to choir churches. You know, so like, I think if you've got the impetus, the vision, the creativity, I mean, it helps. They've got a little bit of money that they've chucked at it as well, as the C of E manages to do every now and again. You can do some cool stuff. And I think Sam's right. You know, I think for parents with young children, if something fun is going on in their locality and it's not going to cost them an arm and a leg, they're probably quite warm to going. You know, when I used to run our toddler group, we used to run messy church quite often. We always did a light party. We always did a Christmas event. We always did an Easter event. Again, we're a small congregation of 100 of people in a smallish town of 7,000. We don't have a massive evangelism strategy. We don't have hundreds of people turning up to our stuff all the time. But for those events, all my non-Christian friends would come and bring their kids, like without fail. And they didn't care that we were telling them Bible stories and giving them little books that had Christian stories in. And, you know, like, it really didn't matter. They loved it. They were very open to it. And I think when children are small, especially, is probably a really good time to engage with faith for both the adults and the children. I think all the stats say that you're more likely to come to faith under the age of 11, I think it is. And with schools doing less and less of that thing, you know, if we want to see the next generation of kids grow up and have any kind of knowledge of, you know, even just the basics of little Bible stories, then we have to take every opportunity we can to communicate them in a fun and creative way, like messy church and muddy church. And we do beach church even, because we live by the coast, and that's super cool.
Don't rub it in, Emma.
I was thinking of similar statistics when you were talking there. I heard one the other day about, you know, the chances are when you're on your deathbed, the chances are your beliefs will be the same as when you were a kid, in, you know, statistically. So actually, if you can facilitate an environment where a child or a teenager can have a really significant encounter with God and hear great teaching and theology and get great spiritual input, the chances are that will be with them for life. And I don't know what it says about human nature. Sometimes I wonder that statistic is there because actually as we get older, we become more and more proud in, you know, more resistant. Yeah, more resistant to change. But anyway, to take that statistic as read, it's vital that if we're talking about long-term church growth, we have to have a strategy for young people. And Tim's right, the stats around young people are terrible. And this has to be a priority for every church to turn it around.
But this is what I find so puzzling about it, is because you're both right that this is both a kind of urgent priority. And as Emma says, like, among the easier things to do in terms of evangelism, you know, putting on a kids event, because you get the parents come along for free, right? Because they have to provide childcare. So you kind of get, you know, buy one, get two adults chucked in for free. People are so much more open to hearing about Christian stuff when it's mediated through a friendly puppet show about a Bible story or something, rather than like, you know, you're a grown-up, let's discuss your reasoned disbelief in the existence of God. So it's both urgent and important, and it's much easier, as you guys seem to be saying, and yet it's not happening. Like, what am I missing here? Why does the British church find it so difficult to get young people into the building if it's both an urgent missional priority and something that's actually among the easier, like lower bar to entry forms of mission?
I guess it takes quite a lot of time, effort, resilience, commitment to work with children and young people, doesn't it? If you're talking about school age, you know, talking about toddler group type things, again, we're looking at middle of the day, middle of the week stuff. So you need volunteers who are available at that time. If you're looking at older, if you're looking at youth, it's hard work. Like, it requires long-term commitment, coming alongside people who are difficult to work with sometimes and don't want to listen to you.
Misbehave.
I mean, I've done this as well. I've done the Friday night youth club. I know what it's like. But the funny thing is, you know, I will meet young people now in town, and previous to working for Premier, when I was in my old job, we'd often have young people coming into our office. I worked for Christian ministry that was located in our town. And these would be the kids who are bunking off school and smoking weed and all sorts of stuff. But they would be like, oh, I remember you. I used to come to that Friday night thing at your church. And you'd be like, and in my head, I'm like, yep. And I remember throwing you out for being, you know, disruptive all the time. And I didn't think you were listening and blah, blah, blah. But like Sam says, some, you know, those links have been made. Something is sort of in them that they've heard, or, you know, their experience of you. And so I think it is worth it, but it's hard. I think that's the difference. And I guess, I don't know if it's maybe something about, I think for Sunday morning church, it's a different argument. It's kind of, it's hard to do all age stuff, and it's hard to not just revert to the kind of worship and the service that serves us as adults. And so sometimes we neglect the harder work, I guess. I don't know. Maybe others disagree with that analysis. That would be my two pennies.
I definitely resonates what you said about Sunday mornings. And I've often had this niggling thought at the back of my head, which is that I don't like, I believe in the idea of all age worship. I don't really believe in it in practice. You know, I can't really remember the last time I attended an all age service of worship on a Sunday, which felt like it was genuinely reaching both the young and the old. Like, we've all been to ones where it's just a standard Sunday service and they just did a kids song at one point and they thought that made it all age, and everyone under the age of 12 was like pulling their hair out with boredom. But I've also been to lots of services which have been fantastically engaging for young people, and there was like color and light and craft and games, and I'm sitting here being like, but this is based on like a single verse from a Bible passage I've read 1,000 times. I'm not getting anything fresh from this. And maybe that's okay, right? But yeah, I genuinely struggle to see how it is possible to do all age worship, which actually meets the needs of all ages, rather than just making it for young people or making it for old people and everyone else has to kind of like get along with it.
Yes, there is a famous line, isn't there, about all age services, that the reason they're called all ages is because all ages hate them or something, which is obviously completely unfair. But can I just speak positively to this question? Because I've just returned from Spring Harvest. And I'd not been to Spring Harvest in quite some time, and I certainly hadn't been with children before. So we went along every morning, 9 a.m., to the all-age worship. Half an hour, 9 till half 9. It's called The Big Start. And can I just say, it was outstanding. It was so, so good. And I hear what you're saying, Tim, about can and all... Basically, you are saying, can an all-age service equally appeal to all ages? And I would completely agree with your sort of doubting as to whether that's even possible. But if it is possible, Spring Harvest have got very, very close. Now, obviously, it's different. It's a big event. You know, they plan it all year round. You know, you're paying money to be there. There's resources that the average church... But can I just say, it was superb. And maybe that's the answer if you have young kids and you want to experience great all-age work. Book it next year. I don't know. But at
are
least
you on
gave...
commission for them or something, Sam?
I'm not.
Other Christian festivals are available, guys.
Yeah.
I just say, on the contrary, I'm not on commission. We paid money as Premier to be there this year. So that's the direction the money's going in, just to be absolutely clear how the deal worked. Premier Christianity were there and we gave away thousands of copies and it was great. So yes, I did a deal with Spring Harvest, but I was the one paying money rather than taking anything. Yeah, I just, it gave me a bit of hope that, okay, it is possible to do this, and to do this in a way that does actually sort of tick the boxes for most people in the tent. But I do accept it's much harder to replicate at a local level. And I mean, it'd be great to have someone on the podcast who is a fan of all age worship and can properly defend it, because I'm definitely not that person. Like, I find it pretty hard for the same reasons you do, Tim, of being like, can you really do something that reaches everyone all at once? I'm not sure if that is possible. I think there's a reason why we divide up into age groups, because we do all need quite different things, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I would defend it. I enjoy it most of the time. I you know, big up to my little church here in Weybridge. We have quite a mixed age of congregation, and I think we do it not perfectly, but all right. And part of that is, I think, due to the fact that our lead pastor is an ex-youth worker, our current youth pastor is phenomenal. And between them, they work really hard to cultivate. And I think this is the trick. Outside of the quarterly all-age services, they work very hard to do the little things every week that cultivate within our church a culture of loving families and children. So if you come to our church on any Sunday, you will find all of the kids right down the front in front of the band, bashing away on drums and goodness knows what else. And I've got to be honest, there are times when it's a little bit distracting. But also, I love the fact that we have more than five under 16s in our church, and I would defend that to the hilt. You know, if the choice is we have no young people, and oh, isn't it lovely and easy to, you know, reflect quietly before Jesus, and oh, this is a little bit hard to concentrate, but actually our church is rammed with families, I would take the latter every day of the week. And like this week, for example, one of the things that our pastor did just as the worship ended and before the kids went down to their groups was he called all of the young people to the front, and he knelt down with them and he said, kids, we're just gonna, before we go downstairs, we just want to pray with you. And he repeated a really simple prayer for them to say, to ask Jesus to be with them in their groups. And those kinds of little things week in, week out tell, I think, the whole congregation, we value our children and our young people. And this is important. And when we have all age services, they say very clearly from the front over and over and over again, please don't come into this service expecting that you're not going to hear from God today because it's an all age service. You're going to hear from God today, and God is going to work through our children and young people. And we have our children and young people leading worship during those services, which again, it's been a little bit hit and miss over the years. But, you know, I think those are the places where you sort of build a culture and an expectation within your congregation that maybe it doesn't have to be the way we sometimes assume it's going to be because it's all age.
I think it's really interesting what you're talking about setting a culture, because I think so many churches do children's and young people's ministry out of a sense of obligation. And you really, you can feel that both as a young person and as a grown up or as a parent, when the other weeks, you know, people are tutting the kids and making noise or looking, you know, frowns at the toddlers for running around. And there's a sense in which they are disturbing our solemnity. This is not your week. Your week is the fourth Sunday of every month when we do all age worship. But this is actually the second Sunday. So can we please have like the beauty of holiness and the solemnity of the Lord? And actually, you know, there's a small part of me which sympathizes, but there's a bigger part of me which says, actually, I don't think the gospel permits us to do that. I think Jesus is pretty clear. And the stories about, you know, rebuking the disciples and sending away the children give us a pretty clear message that actually we don't really have the liberty to choose kind of like quality over inclusion of young people. And that, as you say, is the kind of long, slow work of many years in building a church culture where the young person genuinely believes that they are welcome to be their true selves in all its messiness of being a young person without it being some kind of imposition or an intrusion on the worship of others.
Yeah, and I do wonder if this is partly explains that statistic where, was it a third of Church of England churches have no young people? Is it only takes a little bit of that culture of tutting and looking down your nose at the kids? It only takes a little bit of that, and you will find pretty much every young family will leave your church. It's going to happen. And what will happen is they'll all go to the church down the road that already has masses of young people and a thriving youth work. And that's been my experience in a lot of places. You have a lot of churches with basically no young people at all. And then you have one where like all the young people go there. I mean, you see this all the time, especially with youth groups. You have a church with a huge youth group because they've just developed a really good culture of valuing young people, of building them in. And there is also true that once you get to a certain size of a youth group, there is more you can do and you have more resources. But we kind of end up with this, I think, slightly bizarre situation sometimes where it's a kind of all or nothing. You know, the church either has basically no young people or the church has all the young people and it's taken all of them. And I wonder if sometimes that's what's going on. But I have seen that culture kind of tutting and looking down at the young people. If you don't jump on that quickly and shut that down, that is going to be really bad news for your church's long-term future, because it's not just that the babies and the kids are going elsewhere, their parents who could be in their 20s or 30s or 40s, which is also a demographic the church is not doing a great job at reaching, they will go elsewhere. So I think that is a really practical thing that leaders have to shut down as quickly as possible. We've got to build this culture where everyone feels welcome. And don't get me wrong, because I've been a preacher before where there's a baby crying or a kid running around, and I'm not saying it's easy, it's not. But you know what, as Emma said, what's more important, and as you said, Tim, what's more important biblically and how Jesus related to young people? I think we've got a clear direction there from scripture as to the line we should take.
Yeah, sure. I mean, having young kids in church is really hard. Like, I remember it. You guys are in the middle of it. It really doesn't take much when you're a mum and or a dad and you're knackered and you've made every effort to get there and you've probably bowled in late and everything's gone wrong. For just to be made feel like, even if it's not even really meant, it's just that perception of like, oh, are we not doing, you know, people don't want me here. And you bail, you know, because it's just, it's horrific. And then, like Sam says, you've lost that family forever. And you've potentially lost those young people. You know, the best scenario is they go to the church down the road with the youth work. The worst scenario is they go, church is not welcoming. I'm not going to church anymore. And then potentially that child grows up not being part of a church family and goes on to not grow in their own Christian faith. That's tragic, really.
I can remember being part of a church where we would, as a leadership team, often debate this issue we had of like most of the congregation coming late. And it was quite a big issue because like most of the congregation turned up really, really, really late. And we're like, how do we fix this? And tried all sorts of things and basically nothing worked. But the reason I thought of that was I heard another story recently about a head teacher of a school who stands at the school gates and will say to the young mums or young dads or whoever it is coming in, well done. Literally like, well done for getting here. And not in a kind of patronising way, but this person I was speaking to was like, oh, I really needed that because it's such an effort in the morning just to get my kids dressed and to the school gate. And a head teacher who's literally congratulating me for something as simple as bringing my child along. And I was contrasting those two things. On the one hand, a church leadership team thinking, right, how can we, you know, make sure these people come to our church in time? And a bit of a culture of kind of, I mean, I can remember things being said about, well, you know, if you don't come on time, just show you don't really value being in the Lord's presence. You know, quite a judgmental, quite a judgmental attitude at times to people coming late. Contrasting that with the head teachers at the school gates, recognizing that it takes a lot for a parent to get their kid to school each day. I think more of that latter attitude in our churches of just like, hey, well done for making it, is a much more welcoming environment as opposed to judging your congregation for turning up late.
I'll never forget talking about the challenge of having children in the congregation. One of my hardest ever experiences was trying to lead worship on the keyboard while one of the young people was on the cajon next to me and had no sense of rhythm. And so I don't know if you guys are musical, but trying to play a song and sing and keep in time while there's someone next to you is just at sporadic, spasmodic moments banging a drum that bears no relation to the actual beat of the song. Oh, it was
difficult.
And also, because your face, you can't let it show on your face. I can't like wince every time visibly this very energetic but tuneless 12-year-old banged the cajon in the middle of the beat. So that was a challenge, but probably worthwhile. A final controversial question then. We talked earlier about how it's genuinely really difficult in a context of a single service to kind of meet the needs of different age groups. And you said how often it works out that there's a kind of all or nothing effect in a town. One church has got one big youth group. Others has got nothing at all. Is that just fine? Should we just lean into that and say it's fine for one church in an area to specialize in work with young people and build up momentum and critical mass, and the other churches, it's fine for them to focus on adults and they can just send their young people at appropriate ages to the big church in town that does the great youth group?
Well, I would love to see a bit more sharing in terms of, we mentioned this in the context of should you run a toddler group or is there something better happening? And I was thinking, you know, the number of times two churches next door to each other have a toddler group at the same time. And I've seen that with Alpha as well. Like just, you know, if you're a church leader, just talk to other church leaders. What night of the week are you doing Alpha? We'll make sure we do Alpha on a different night. Same for toddler groups. And I'd love to see that kind of sharing with youth groups. And I know this has been a problem in some places in the past with people feeling a bit like, oh, our young people are going to the church down the road for a youth service. Or even the receiving church saying, oh, but they're not members of our church. Why are they coming to our youth group? And I'd love to see that attitude change and say, hey, there's nothing wrong here. We're just sharing resources. And I can think back to when I was a teenager, many moons ago, Tim, but you know, the local church
not
I was part
long,
of,
Sam, sure.
it had the resources to like, you know, do a Delirious gig or some other band, you know, just because the church had the money to bring in a big band. And we'd invite, you know, young people from all across the county. They'd bus in and all the rest of it. And I think, great, let's use that. And let's, if you're a smaller church, don't be jealous of that. Just say, well, that's great. They got the resources. We'll send our young people there. Maybe there's a way we can return the favor in a different way. So I think you're right, playing to your strengths. But the only caveat I would give is, yeah, play to your strengths, but don't give up completely. Don't say, well, we just won't do any youth work because that church does it better. Do something, but don't feel obligated to do everything. Something, but not everything would be my advice.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think there's clearly a role for specialization and not duplicating lots of work. But fundamentally, I think every church is probably called to be a kind of intergenerational family. I don't think you could ever be content as a church community if you're like, yeah, we're just over 40s and there's no one else here who wasn't born, you know, after the year 1980. I think that clearly doesn't kind of tie in with what the Bible teaches the church, the local church, is supposed to look like. But maybe there is certainly space for a bit more creativity as ever in this thing. All right, well, we'll call it quits there. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Emma. Thanks for everyone for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, bye-bye. That's it for this week's Premier Christian Newscast. But before you go, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And why not tell a friend about the show too? And if you'd like even more church news analysis, you can also subscribe to my new free email newsletter, The Critical Friend. Each week, I send an email packed with links to interesting things happening in the church world and my commentary on them. Just visit tswyatt.substack.com. to find out more and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Premier Christian Newscast.